Hello, and this is a podcast. This week's episode is with Jerry Hendrix, who in Abilene is a bigger name. He owns Monk's Coffee Shop. He owns, with his son, and operates Horizon T-shirts, or Horizon Images, which is a screen printing company. And he also does some summer camps for youth and middle school, church programs and all that good stuff. He's a great guy. Somebody that stood out to me a long time ago when I first met him, and I actually can't even remember how I came to knew him? Oh my goodness. How I came to know him. He just started talking to me once, I think, and since then it's just been really easy to go in and get coffee and say hi. And actually, it's fun that this episode's releasing today, because he just opened a new branch of Monk's. So for those of you that don't know about this yet, that are listening, if you live in Abilene, there is a new Monk's location on the north side of town, right across from Hardin Simmons, off of Hickory and Ambler. So you should go in. But Jerry's great. He's a business guy. He refers to himself as fertilizer in this episode, because he is one of those people that invests into a lot of individuals that he sees potential in, and so he kind of talks about how everybody has a seed, and he wants to help people find that seed and reach their potential, and so he calls himself fertilizer or manure, whatever you want to call him. Great conversation. I was worried about the sound quality when I first recorded it, because it was kind of noisy. He recorded it in his treehouse office in Monk's, and it actually ended up being not as bad. There's a little bit of coffee grinder noise and some ambient noise in the background, but it's not bad at all, actually. So, sounds pretty good. Recorded with my buddy Prentice Ashford last night. His episode will be coming up within the next month or so, and things are going good. I'm enjoying the podcast. We're getting down to where I'm going to start needing to look outside of my circle to get guests. So if any of you that listen to this have anybody in mind, or think that it would just be fun to listen to me talk to / interview somebody, you can just let me know. You can email me at michaeldavidlaroux@gmail.com. That's michaeldavidlaroux@gmail.com. And let me know. Or you could just comment on my blog posts that are these podcast posts. So I hope you enjoy it, and I appreciate you, those of you that listen, and I'm actually going to go get some coffee from Jerry right now. Bye. It's recording. Does that make you feel any better?
That's why I want the lights on.
I typically do, no, the light's on if it's plugged in.
So do you edit it?
A little bit, if I need to.
Whoa!
You can tell me whatever you want to take out. I've only had to take out a couple things from the 7 that I've done, though.
Whoa, you did 7 already?
You are the 7th, I think. Is that okay?
Yeah, man. It's a good number, I hear.
Yeah, and I might need your help with figuring out where to go next. That's just an off-the-cuff thing.
Yeah, I'll need to kind of know.
I'm looking for anybody. I'm not to know them.
Oh, then it's easy.
Yeah, but as long as they're interesting. They have to be interesting. Does that count? But I might
drink Dos Equis, is that it?
Yeah, they're the okay. Most interesting men or women in the world. I've only done one woman so far. Then a few HSU professors on the list next. I want to contact Jay Moore. Do you know Jay Moore?
Yeah.
And then Kirk House, probably.
You won't be able to understand him.
That's okay. Is that racist, or is that...
Are we live?
See, this is exactly why I wanted to do this with you. Yeah. This is so funny. Already. Man, I don't... Okay, this is where I want to start, actually.
Okay.
I have the first time I was in this office, I don't remember why we were talking, but we were just hanging out. And I've started, that was about the time I started writing down quotes that I really liked. Mm-hmm. And so you said something, and I wrote down a quote. Do you really?
Because I never remember what I quoted or what I said.
Do you mean, I'll just read it to you so I don't mess it up at all.
Oh my gosh, it's in the phone.
Yeah, because I keep all my quotes on my phone. So you said, it's near the top because I like it a lot.
All right.
Where are you? If you're not apologizing for something, you're not trying hard enough.
That's pretty good.
Isn't that good? That's exactly what you said.
I should remember that one.
Well, it's quoted by you. If, so.
Okay, that's good.
But I'm trying to, I wish I remembered the context we were in when we were talking about it. But I was wondering if you remembered saying that and if you live by that or if that's just something that was in the moment.
Well, I mean, very definitely the quote was in the moment. But I do think I remember stopping and saying, hey, that was a pretty good quote.
You probably did. And that's why I went, you're right. I'm going to write it down.
I really don't remember the context for that. And I don't know that that's, I mean, there's parts of that that makes sense to the way that a person would live their life.
Sure.
But I think I was probably talking about risk to some degree, that you don't want to factor out, you're never going to factor out all the risk in something. And so at some point you pull the trigger and do something, hopefully, if you're going to do anything.
Sure.
And so, and I don't think risk is a bad word. I think people have a reaction to it.
Yeah.
But I think that's unnecessary, because risk comes in different ways and different levels. But if you're doing, I like that. I think we'd stick with that.
Good.
That at some point you're going to, you probably ought to apologize for something.
Well, and risk is one of my favorite words right now, actually. John Hunt, since I'm recording with you, I'll drop his episode today.
Yeah.
And we talked about risk a lot and talked about, I'm getting married, so it's a risk to get married. It's a risk to put yourself out there in a lot of ways. Is that something you've dealt with starting a coffee shop and starting shirts? And probably started Horizon, didn't you?
Yeah. I think when I was doing, at the stage in life where I was doing profiles all the time, I was...
What does that mean?
Psychological.
Okay.
Let's figure out what kind of person you are and how you operate best. I was a practical thinker and low risk.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at those things, and well, when I begin, after I started doing a lot of these things, and I began to hear how my story sounded to other people, I realized that I was taking risks that they would never take. And so what I concluded was that I am a thinker, that I'm more than a risker, and I am practical in the way that I think.
Yeah.
But I've just learned, I learned to take calculated risk, and I've learned to calculate quicker. That's what I finally figured out.
Yeah.
So that, and some of that's experience, some of it, and a lot of it, I think, is knowing yourself, where you're able to see something and see how it ends, or see it down the road at least.
Yeah.
So,
was it risky getting monks up?
Oh yeah, it was. I sound cliche-ish on all this stuff.
When that's talking, okay.
But I've said that it was the best and worst thing that I'd ever done.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you start it?
In 06.
Okay.
And we had talked about it for 3 years.
Yeah.
It was one of those deals where we were looking for ways to be missional as individuals. And so life came to an intersection as far as what I was doing with Horizon and church and that finding that missional expression. And so we talked about this for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then one day I'm headed to church at the Civic Center, and I drove downtown and I saw this for lease, and I looked inside and I knew that it would work.
Really?
Now it's taken a long way to get it to where it's doing okay. But there's where I am more of a visionary than what I'd given myself credit for, because I just kept thinking it's going to work out, it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And all the numbers were trending good, but we just weren't, we weren't learning to do business.
Yeah.
And I had to step back, and that made a deliberate decision to learn business.
Yeah.
And so I did that the way I know how to do it. So went to the library, started reading, started talking to people.
Research.
Yeah. So.
And it worked.
It's working.
Yeah.
It's in the mix. And then now you have to navigate transition and things like that.
Yeah.
It's fun being in this because of the relational factor, because yeah. I am able to talk to people all the time and occasionally invite them up to my treehouse.
Sure. And, the sacred space.
And really the sacred space, and drop some top line quotes on them.
Of course. I am honored to have been in the treehouse.
Yeah, embrace the treehouse.
What all do you do? You do this? Horizon?
I do Horizon.
You still do Horizon?
Which Horizon includes camps is the big portion, with t-shirts closing in.
Yeah.
And then our screen printing. And then we do curriculum as well, which is how I got started with Horizon.
Horizon does curriculum?
Yeah, was writing curriculum.
Okay.
And then, of course, with t-shirts, we were branching out and doing retail also. And that's what I'm more interested in, is the retail side of it.
Yeah.
And then, because the other will take care of itself. But the retail side is what adds the fun to it.
And what's your involvement in Crosspoint?
There, I'm the founding pastor and lead pastor.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, I started that. And I think it wasn't until I started Monks that I openly admitted I was an entrepreneur.
Really?
Yeah. I just never had thought about that. And I think, you know, in youth ministry, you're always dealing with ideas, and which is an entrepreneurial deal.
Yeah, and you had just come out of doing youth ministry.
And that's what I did for 20 years. So, yeah. And I learned that there's a difference between just having good ideas and being good at business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to narrow that gap. But and then once I kind of realized that, I kind of went back to some of my roots, where when I was 12, I drove to Abilene with a friend and his grandpa, and we sold cantaloupes door to door.
Really?
Yeah. And I can still remember sitting in the living room counting the money, counting the cash, and I put it in a pile.
Uh-huh.
And my dad helped me put it in the bank. And then from there, I mean, I've sold baseball cards, I've sold comic books, collectibles.
Uh-huh.
I've always had something about life where I was selling stuff or whatever. Even though I'm not a good salesman, really, I like cash flow.
Yeah.
And now I like positive cash flow. I've learned the difference, finally.
What's the difference?
The positive cash flow is you're making money. Uh-huh. The first several years here, I learned negative cash flow very well.
Yeah.
So it's more a part of who I am than I realized.
Really?
So.
That's interesting. How is your involvement in the church? I mean, how do you feel as a pastor? What does that mean to you?
I've enjoyed the Crosspoint experience because it's really, it's a lot like youth ministry.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that we do church. It's creative. You're able to ask below the surface questions.
Mm-hmm.
Without being offensive or getting defensive.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy that experience. It's mm-hmm. it's hard to project the future of that kind of work, and I probably have more anxiety about that than the people who attend.
Really?
I think, you know, in the way churches develop now, with kind of desiring and enjoying this organic approach, you know, it's hard to know where that ends up.
Mm-hmm.
And so
how did all of that come about? Was that right after Pioneer, or was that later on?
I'd been in my formation. I had gone to Saddleback in the late late 80s, early 90s. My wife's from California, and I'd heard about the church, and we visited out there. And then in the 90s, I went to Willow Creek. And so I was familiar with the two.
You went there consistently?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
To investigate or attend, eventually attend conferences.
Isn't there similar, Cross Point and Willow Creek?
You know? Yeah.
They're pretty close.
Sure, real close. And that was the difference. That was, those two things were really new to the way churches were being done. And I still maintain, if you go back and look at the way they were launched and their pastors, it reflects youth ministry. So that's the reason I'm still real passionate about youth ministry, is I think the next church is reflected in the current youth ministry. And that's why I say now, I mean, when I was first starting youth ministry, they were trying to teach us to be professional.
Yeah.
And now, in the current churches, you have pastors wearing jeans and untucked shirts.
Yeah.
So to me, it reflects, the current generation reflects past youth ministries, and I think that will continue to happen.
Yeah.
But we, when we got ready to go with this, so it was in my DNA, plus I think that entrepreneurial piece was at work. And we went through a process at Pioneer where we were talking about starting new churches and ministries. And a friend and I were involved in those conversations. And so that became the next step. The one question that youth ministers deal with that no one else on staff has to deal with is, what's next?
Yeah.
And so that was the what's next for me. And so we started talking about different kinds of churches and what one ought to look like. And so we just started. We didn't start the Saddleback way. Where you already have your model predetermined. And with the generation that I was working with, it was much more of a just an organic evolution of sorts. And now we're a lot more intentional with the way we do ministry. And we've kind of figured out who we are. So,
are y'all mostly college?
No. In fact, we started the fall with zero college students. We had graduated.
Really?
We've always had at least a few.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days, we had a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, probably 70%.
Okay.
College, but so we started over, and then now we have a really good group.
Yeah.
That just kind of came out of nowhere, because we were prepared and we were strategic, I think. But it's young families. I'm not the oldest person in our church. There may be one other person that's older than me, but everybody else is probably 40 and under. So, and we have families, and we have people who are more attached to Abilene. They're not transitional.
Yeah,
which that's who we dealt with in our early years almost exclusively.
Well, and you seem to have. You told me one time, I think when I shared with you that I wanted to stay here. At least for a few years, and as I was getting ready to graduate and was looking for jobs and stuff, you said something to the extent of, it's good to have people stay in Abilene, because, and you called me a good person, so I appreciate that, but you said it's good to have good people stay in Abilene because a lot of them leave.
Right.
I'm trying to think of how to ask that, but why do you say that? And do you see a lot of good people leave and you feel like they could stay here or should stay here? Or
And
what is Abilene to
you?
Well,
they don't... I think the thing that I've come across, and this is included with monks, is that it's that the next steps or what our success or career and life occurs away from here. And you have three universities... and an air base that you have people who are coming here for a limited time in their view.
Big turnover.
And then once they get here, they have a different response to Abilene and what it is. And one of the things that it doesn't have is that, hey, this is a place where I could stay. So I think it's rare that a sharp person coming out of colleges and from the base says, hey, I'm going to plant myself here in Abilene.
Yeah.
And some of that is just the economic development of Abilene.
Sure.
And I know when we started Cross Point, I was more aware of this kind of stuff than I am now. But like mid-management opportunities didn't really exist to a great degree in Abilene.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of good startup places and some good finishing places, but in that in-between of I'm just married, starting to have children,
yeah,
I've got to go to the Metroplex.
Yeah.
Or wherever
or
else.
San Antonio.
And so... So I think it's difficult, and then it's on the other side. It is interesting to see people see the movement back, where they left for a while for a period, and now they've come back and established the people. Some of the people I know came back and established businesses here, after having been in other cities. So, it's reassuring to experience that, and I get excited. I think when people see that without having to move away and then come back.
Do you feel like Abilene is growing?
Yeah.
Economically?
Yeah. It's there.
We have McAllisters now.
We have two.
we do.
one of the indications is the work they've done on South Pine, because they wanted to bring make it more attractive entrance into the downtown from the interstate. And then the most recent one, and I just drove by this again last night because I heard people talking about it even more, is the South Downtown development, which is what all of the construction is on South First over here. They're not only are they putting in sidewalks, but they're doing landscaping with trees and stuff.
That's
so
cool.
That's
mostly
just
on Butternut, or is that
no? It extends from Butternut all the way down past. Where all the stores are,
okay.
That are right there on the street.
Yeah,
and then if you turn, once you get to the end of that and turn, there's a new event center being done.
Yeah,
have you seen that?
I've heard about it.
It's the Old Mill Winery and Event Center.
Yeah. That's the winery's going into that, isn't it?
No, it's different people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you get to a point where with downtown or with general attitude towards the economy, you kind of drudge along. You're always going to have people coming in and people going out, but if enough of those stay, and then you start to see things turn. And I think we're at that turning point where we're beginning to see some things that are attractive to younger adults. And I think that was the
part. Which is why people leave.
Right.
And the college joke is always, there's nothing to do.
Yeah, that's why we created the shirt.
Yeah, and why we see, which is, keep Abilene boring.
Right.
That's perfect. And that's why we see, at Hardin Simmons at least, the problem of we can't do weekend programming and events because nobody's here.
Yeah, everybody
students
leaves.
Go home every week.
Well, and that's, there's a new place that's come in over at Pine Street where they're going to try to do concerts and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I could say haven't worked in the past. We've tried it. We built a stage for it. We've done that.
Yeah.
But that's only the front part of that story. I think the other part is that it takes enough people doing the same kinds of things to create that critical mass. All of a sudden, you turn a corner, and you've got something that's good going on. So
y'all have had some big names come in though.
We've been fortunate.
Civil Wars came in like right before they blew up. Or right as they were getting
right
huge.
As they were, we had booked them. We had signed contracts with them before they appeared on Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
And so
is that kind of their starting
and
point?
And once that happened, Taylor Swift apparently was friends with them and had tweeted about them back when Twitter was pretty young.
Taylor Swift was really big.
And then they appeared on Leno, and then it all blew up. And then they were headed to South by Southwest, so they did a lot of shows in small venues.
Yeah.
And they, interesting, they would not let us change the venue. They wanted it to be here and kind of keep the, whoever it was, whatever they were at that time, they wanted to keep that intact.
I don't think I was here yet. I don't know if I was in college at the time, but I heard it was nuts.
It was packed. It was sold out and packed.
Yeah. But then y'all have had, I know they're smaller, but David Ramirez has showed up several times.
Is doing real well.
Yeah, he's getting a little bigger.
Yeah. And
Sarin's
been here a couple of times. Jillian Edwards is kind of under the radar for a while. I think she's still
getting bigger too, though.
Yeah, I think she's going to be really good. And then the first big show we had here was a group called the Album Leaf.
Okay.
And they were an ambient band.
Yeah.
And again, we sold, that's the most expensive ticket we ever sold. It was a $10 ticket.
Yeah.
And again, it was packed out. Mm-hmm. And they were on a tour bus and everything. I mean, they were,
somehow
this guy that was doing our shows negotiated with them and pulled it off.
How do y'all do that? Do you still do shows? Or are you still
going to do them? We are in the process of branding Monk's Music.
Oh.
And that will start in the fall.
That's
awesome.
We'll
do three shows in the fall. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is we're going to create our own t-shirts, our own merchandise.
Okay.
And then we'll promote that through live music that we do here, either at open mic or just local shows.
Sure.
And then we have a guy that's going to run the shows for us in the fall.
And so is that kind of like an expansion, or how does that work?
Yeah,
business-wise,
you just come to a place where you're having to find new ways to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, what happened was shows were costly for us just because you had to bring in more people. It was more work, more trouble, and you didn't necessarily sell extra stuff.
Sure.
And so we're going to reorganize and be willing to take that hit in order for the good marketing and the good vibe that it brings.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that or tear down the stage.
Sure.
And so we decided to do it where we want to create a package for that, where people can pre-purchase all three shows, get a t-shirt, have backdoor entrance to all shows, and it's transferable too. I mean, it's we feel like we've come up with a good product and way to approach it. That way, when a band wants to contract with us, we can say we already have 35 pre-sale tickets,
yeah,
or 50, or however many it is that we sell. So,
I know about that. That's
And then we're awesome. And we're looking for key, because the problem, what we figured out was that whereas in Austin, you go to a show, you don't really notice the demographic that's there.
Yeah.
You just go to a show. Whereas in Abilene, it's a college show.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that people who are out of college don't like music or wouldn't like to attend shows. So we're wanting to what we're going to do is just hit the ground and ask people.
Yeah.
Direct selling, say, hey, would you be interested in this? Guaranteed three shows. If you can't attend one, you can transfer it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what we wanted to do in the fall.
Yeah. Do y'all have any bands lined up?
We haven't got bands lined up yet. We have a guy that has agreed to do the shows. He's been doing house shows, promoting house shows in town. And so he already has a good list of folks.
Good.
And also, we felt like it was a good partnership because of what he wanted to do and what we felt like would be the next step for us.
Yeah. So he's like an opener for each show or something like that?
No. He's just a promoter of our shows.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And then we're going to divide it. We'll do the marketing in-house, and then he will be responsible for something else. But we'll brand Monk's Music, not... In the past, we try to help these guys get started in a portfolio, developing a portfolio or business background. So it was branded all over the place.
Okay.
And so we're going to go ahead and brand it, sell our own merchandise at events, and do the packages.
Yeah. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's fun to think about. Hope it works out.
Yeah. Do you think you would do any of that stuff over at the new place? In the back?
I still think that the idea over there that would work best are patio shows.
Yeah, smaller.
Yeah, and there you can go with local groups or traveling through types of groups.
Yeah.
If the group on Pine Street can begin to get traction with the same kind of music that you would play here,
yeah,
it could be a game changer for that kind of music in Abilene.
Mm-hmm.
so that students might stay here on a weekend.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's yet to be seen. They're new, and they're just getting started over there.
Sure. So. Well, and now ACU and Hardin-Simmons are blowing up a little bit more, at least.
Yeah, I mean, everything, you've kind of passed the recession years of 2009 and 2010.
Yeah.
And things are kind of moving in a more positive direction, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be the beneficiary of that kind of stuff through the universities and even business. So that'll be fun to see what happens next.
Are there, and this sounds kind of weird, are there more people like you in Abilene, guys that are just starting things and trying to develop culture and improve the area around? Do you see that?
I'm the only cultural architect in town. I just want to say that.
Yes, that's it. Another good quote. I'll write that down.
And if you could edit a lead in with that quote, that would be good.
I'll just title the episode. Yeah. The cultural architect.
They're around. You know, I through Chamber of Commerce and some other events, I tend to find some of those people. You know, I don't know what their interest is. I mean, I learned in one of the things that we were getting started that it's never, and I think this is true. I don't want to speak for all entrepreneurs.
Sure.
I couldn't.
But right.
I think that being an entrepreneur is more about the conquest than it is the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, there's always this anxiety about starting something else and getting something else going. And so I think, I mean, those people are in Abilene.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see it more in a younger culture that's here.
Yeah.
With some guys that I've met through Monks.
Yeah.
That have that spirit, and they try to bring those people together.
Yeah.
But on a grand scale, I would say Abilene probably didn't have a lot of those kind of folks.
You see, I mean, I've through the normal eyes, I guess, you see places like Abbey House or the winery or some of the food trucks, stuff like that coming up, but I don't know how grounded they are. And well, Abbey House exploded, but
yeah, it's people with an entrepreneurial spirit and an understanding of culture, I think.
Sure.
And I do think you see more of that. I mean, you can come downtown now. Like, I was here last night, and you couldn't find a parking place because stuff's going on. And that's a good deal.
That's great.
You know, there's a lot of things they were already doing through the museums and the art center, but that's not going to be enough to sustain it.
Yeah.
And so you need people who are coming down for coffee or a sandwich or a meal, or even just a shop.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons we have a t-shirt place downtown is I saw this building and just, I knew that it would work. I didn't know what it would work as, but ultimately we were able to put our screen printing there and retail in it. But there's not, you know, vacant spaces are filling up and people are trying stuff. So that's good.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I like to pull everything back to, and the reason I started doing this is because I'm so interested in, I've gotten to a phase of my life where I start asking why about more and more and more. And so I'm really interested in the idea of purpose with to whatever extent you want to take it. And so that's the main thing I try to ask everybody that I get to talk to is, what's your view of purpose, and through what lens, I guess, do you see that? And then, you know, from my point of view, I see you living out purpose in a lot of different ways that probably, I think I could kind of define what your purpose is, but through what lens do you look at that, and how do you see it, and how do you kind of embrace purpose in your life?
I went in, I forget what period of life this was, but I went through a period of 4 months hammering out and working on a purpose statement.
Mm-hmm.
And the the two words that emerged from that for me was making disciples. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to be just interpreted in spiritual context. It's about developing leaders and leadership. And basically what I've learned about myself is that I create a culture for good things to happen.
Okay.
That's what I do. And I've tried to do other things, but that seems to be the thing most consistently that I do well. Mm-hmm. And so in that process, I just try to find the right people and then fan their flame.
Yeah.
And so another quote is,
sure.
I believe that there's a seed of greatness in everybody, and they just have to find it in theirself.
Sure.
And so I'm just around to be their fertilizer.
So you're the fertilizer, huh?
I'm the manure in their life.
You're the manure people.
Yeah.
And sometimes fertilizer
just
stinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And isn't enjoyable.
And frustrating.
Yeah.
But, I think that's, when all is said and done, that's my expression. I've been fortunate to be with a lot of good people and to see them do well.
Give me an example, if you don't mind, of somebody that you've been able to fan their flame, show them the seed, and it's just been a success, and somebody's just really ran with it.
Probably the one most people around here would know is Matt Chandler.
Yeah.
I was his youth minister.
Outside of just here would know Matt Chandler, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm referenced in both of his books.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I haven't read them.
You get a shot at me either. Somebody just told me.
Oh, okay.
But I went, one of the guys, when I was early doing Horizon, I was just doing it part-time, a guy came to me that was a youth minister, and he had been fired.
Yeah.
And some conflict with the pastor and misunderstandings. And anyways, this guy he moved back to Abilene to live with his in-laws for a while. Mm-hmm. And I just said, here's what I have. I said, why don't you take Horizon and run with it, see if we can make something out of it. I'd never hired an employee. I just wrote curriculum and sold it as a hobby. Well, 2 weeks ago, I went to Hill Country Bible Church and heard him preach. Mm-hmm. And he preached to several thousand people that weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'd forgotten that story. Sometimes I don't even think about that. There's people like that that came across my path. I do have one intern that now makes seven figures. I think that's rare.
Yeah.
Those are some of the people, I guess, along the way. But I think a lot of it is, it's just selling the dream.
Yeah.
When I called him, he was living in Brownwood, and I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
I just knew that when I talked to him on the phone that he talked funny.
Yeah.
But I told him, I said, if you come to Abilene and you connect with us at Cross Point and work with me, I said, good things will happen. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know why, and I can't tell you anything specific, but I'm just telling you that you'll the next step for you will be really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened with Burgundy Road when they were with us.
Yeah.
With Kirk. And I like, even as silly as it seems sometimes, even some of the baristas that work here.
Yeah.
You know, go on and do real well. But, those are just some of the folks through the years. But I think the part of my philosophy is, in terms of mentoring and stuff, is that I think we have this idea that mentoring is all about us finding someone older or more experienced.
Getting mentored.
Right. Yeah. And I think you need that.
Yeah.
But I also think that we ought to be mentored by the next generation. Mm-hmm. That they're the ones who are really shaping the landscape and who are going to live the landscape, in the landscape. So if we're going to be effective for the long haul, you've got to look forward, but you also have to look backwards.
Sure.
And So if I do, really, if I've done anything different than what I see most people do, that's one thing that I'm intentional about. That's a little bit different. I say that you ought to have two people in your life, those that are leading you and those that you're leading. Mm-hmm. But you need both, not just one of those.
Yeah. One thing that I really appreciate about you, I've always known it, but I think I really realized it through this. People would probably call you like a man of God. You know, you're a pastor. And that's just the language. I'm not saying people would point at Jerry.
Okay,
that's a man of God.
I'm okay with that now.
But what I say is, if somebody just knew that you were a lead pastor, had no idea who you were, that's kind of the phrase that could come to mind. He's clearly a strong Christian leader. He's a man of God. But when you talk about purpose, and when you just talk, you didn't say the word God, or you haven't this entire time. You haven't said anything about living a Christian life. You haven't said the word Jesus. But you talked about making disciples. That's probably the most religious thing you've said so far. Mm-hmm. But you're focused on people and development and community. And I think that's something that I've started to understand the importance of. Mm-hmm. And all of that to say, it's just really refreshing to see somebody that's really involved in a church, see somebody that really cares about developing people and community, but you're not soaked with this, what some people would call cliche religious jargon and all that. And that's not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just refreshing. You clearly have an understanding of what you believe in, and it's more about the people and being the fertilizer, being the manure. And I just appreciate that. I wanted to make a note of that because I think that's really big.
It's some self-awareness.
Yeah.
That's come through time. I think that's the other thing, is that I can remember a guy telling me one time, he picked up this new book.
The Bible?
About half, it's called Halftime.
Okay.
And he's talking about, I think that was the name of it, but he was talking about the second half of your life. And I was in my 30s and had a mission statement, and I go, why would you wait till halftime, to the second half of your life, to live purposefully?
Yeah.
I was probably wrong at that point.
Okay.
I was a little arrogant, I guess.
Sure.
But because while I was purposeful early on, mm-hmm. there is a difference in the way you're able to live out those purposes now. And it's hard.
Now being the second half.
Yeah, second half. And so... And I think maybe what it is that there's some mellowing to seeing the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
That may be what it is.
Sure.
Because it makes you more appreciative of not just what you've done, but hopefully what you're still going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's some truth in all that. I shouldn't have pooped on that parade that early.
What? Oh, okay.
Just that. It all occurred in the second half, but
yeah.
What else, man?
Jeez, you just have answers for everything.
No, I'm pretty good at just this. This is what I do.
Talking to people?
Yeah.
You enjoy talking to people?
I do. Yeah, it keeps me from getting work done.
Well, there you go. That's a practical.
That's what I'm saying. That's one of the best, worst parts about being up here is that I'm I'll hear a voice and I'll go,
oh, man, gotta go downstairs.
Yeah, who is that?
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, I do this and record conversations because I get fuel from it.
Yeah.
So this is all about, I started listening to podcasts from people that I just really enjoyed listening to. And then started, as I always did, I would have good conversations, and then I'd go, I should have recorded that.
Yeah.
That would have been fun to listen to, especially John Witten. and Carrie Fisher, a professor at Hardin-Simmons. And then somebody, Matt Marchbanks, pushed me and just said, you should just do it.
Yeah.
You should just get a microphone and start recording it. And now it's led to yesterday being able to see my own name and stuff on iTunes, which is cool. Even though it's free, anybody can do it. It's still cool to see it.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like I see you talking to people every time I come here. You know everybody.
I know a lot of people, I think. Yep. Or it seems like it. People tell me I do.
Comparatively. to other people in Abilene, you know a lot of people.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
But I've invested 20 years here, so that helps.
That's true.
Helps a little bit.
You don't act like a normal founding leading pastor would. I guess most founding leading pastors don't have a coffee shop, though.
No, no.
And you don't have to work on sermons all week and no, work in a church.
The sermon kind of happens here. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And that's can be a problem sometimes, because you could almost do Sunday mornings like that.
Yeah.
Because things occur here throughout the week.
That's a cool model. I mean, I know John Witten, like his Wednesdays are sermon writing days.
Yeah.
And he has to write a whole thing, read it to his wife, read it to a couple people, edit it. And so it's a really creative process for him.
Yeah.
And he pulls things from real life, but he typically has like a series. And so you just kind of just go up and see what happens?
No, I mean, it's not
like stand-up comedy?
No. Some might think so.
Yeah.
But it is conversational.
Mm-hmm.
And we do follow the lectionary, which gives us a real easy guide for people to kind of know where we're headed, or you know, follow the Christian calendar for the big seasonal stuff.
Easter, Christmas,
which they're a big deal.
Yeah, I go. Sure.
And then we'll do our own series every so often.
Yeah.
But it's really conversational driven, because we want to try to, that's one of our purpose pieces, mm-hmm. is that we want to be, we don't want to just entertain or just teach and then put a period on it and people go home.
Yeah.
We really want to continue the conversation through life that we share together.
Yeah.
And so I've adapted to it. It's been not been an easy thing.
Yeah.
But it's something now, I think it's kind of how I'm identified, how our church is identified, and that's the way we go with it.
Yeah. I think the biggest, and it's not regret, I don't want to use the word regret, but ever since the end of freshman year, all freshman year I went to Beltway and really enjoyed it, and then at the end of freshman year, Charlie Pinnell called me and said, I'd love for you to play drums with us. So since then, I've just been at the same church every Sunday. I don't think I've even been to a different church unless it's a special trip to Dallas or something like that. So I think the only thing I've really disliked about that is I can't visit other places, and I just never have.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd be really interested to see what a Southside experience would be like, and what a Crosspoint experience would be like. First Baptist, I've only been to Beltway and Pioneer in town. I want to try the Branch out, see what that looks like.
I started this year kind of immersing myself back in that culture.
Yeah.
I was meeting with guys that were planting churches, and I had quit reading the books and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And so I've been to, had two or three experiences already this year.
Yeah.
Just intentionally being a part of another congregation or worship service. And so that's helpful to frame your thinking,
mm-hmm.
and then see what you do best, filter that, and push forward.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Should do it. Tell Charlie I'm off this Sunday.
Typically when I'm off, I either have to go to Dallas or I sleep in. I just don't go to church because I've been playing so much, or I feel like I'm exhausted. One of the downsides of hyper-investing.
Yeah.
Doing way too many things.
That's true.
In a life, which I'm sure you understand.
That's what it sounds like.
That's too much. Well, one more question.
Yeah.
And it'll be a choice. You can pick between these two questions.
I'll choose the red pill.
I haven't assigned a color. Okay. I don't know. Either, what's a good book that you've read recently? Or what's something that you're learning right now in your life that's new to you?
The most recent book, I laid off my reading. I was real intense. I set reading goals every year.
Uh-huh.
And I, last year, really pushed back and didn't read much and have only casually gotten started again.
Yeah.
But there is a book called Smart Tribes that I've picked up that has been real helpful. And And most of the books I read are business related.
Yeah, like the Starbucks book.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say I think where I am in life, where I am currently, I'll answer both of them for you. That's just the way I do things.
Sure, of course.
Mm-hmm. That I'm learning the value of being a little bit more strategic about the discipling and mentoring.
Yeah.
I wished I had been more intentional early on.
Really?
I've been very fortunate because basically I just spread fertilizer everywhere.
Yeah.
And just was observing where it was coming up and having, you know. But, and so we do, like even our business, we have networks that we're developing and starting. And that has become the mode of operation for my business life.
Mm-hmm.
And then even in church stuff, because we started meeting with church planters for coffee once a month. So I'm being far more intentional about that than what I used to. So I have as much time as I used to have.
You have more time than you used to?
I know. Time's running out.
Oh, you mean in life?
Yes.
Your second half.
Oh, yes.
They might come up with some kind of cure for aging soon.
That's
never
okay.
Know. You wouldn't take
it's
it?
It's okay now. It's all right.
Well, cool. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it.
Simple and straightforward. Jerry Hendrix, thumbs up. Mm-hmm.